Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Veterans Day edition. Thank you to all the veterans out there. My dad's a veteran. He was a Navy doctor, served with the Marines in Vietnam, and now he's at home, probably listening on the Alexa. He and my mom, they just go, Alexa, play EWTN radio, and our show plays.
Oh, wow. They don't say, Alexa, what is Cy doing?
No, I don't. My dad's name is Cy, too. So
you are listening to Alexa. Now, I know that, but what's Cy doing?
What's the other Cy doing? They ask Alexa all kinds of things. Like they wanted, I saw them one time having a, I'm not going to say argument about which is the tallest mountain in Southern California, but my mother knows everything about geography. And so you just shouldn't argue with her. If she says it's, I don't know if it was San Gregorio. I don't remember. But if she says it's San Gregorio, then that's it.
It's not Mount Whitney. Is that one in California?
I just bragged on my mother's geography, and now you ask me where Mount Whitney is, and I don't know. So I think Mount Whitney is in Alaska, or
Illinois.
I think it might be Illinois or really? Alabama, right. Or it could be Florida. They have a huge mountain range in Florida.
The tallest mountain in Florida is Splash Mountain. Pretty sure.
You win. I thought it could be the Matterhorn, maybe. That's very funny, Trent Horn.
I think I got it right here. I think it's Mount Whitney right here.
Yeah.
So
Mount Whitney. Oh, in California. That's the largest in California.
I thought that's what you asked me. No, largest in California.
Southern California. They were trying to figure out the...
It's out there
near Palm Springs. San Gregorio. Okay. I don't know. John Sorensen would know, but he's not here right now. Our number is 888-318-7884. Why are you an atheist is the question. If you are an atheist, if you are an unbeliever, even if you're one who perhaps entertains the idea that we are fools for being believers, we welcome your call. 888-318-7884. And also, not just is it Veterans Day, but yesterday was the 100th anniversary of the end of the First World War. 100 years.
That's right.
Since the 11th hour of the 11th day.
Armistice Day, yeah.
Armistice Day, yep. Changed in 1954. Do you know why they changed it to Veterans Day? 1954? Try to guess. Something big happened in the 40s.
Something big happened in the 40s. Let's see. They're the jitterbug. It was the jitterbug.
First of all, the jitterbug was the 1920s.
Oh, okay.
But okay.
I'm sorry.
Not a real history buff, huh?
No. Did they play the jitterbug at your prom, and that's how you remember?
Yes, that's right. Okay. I jitterbugged all night long at the prom. Yes.
Buy moon pies for a nickel. Uh-huh. On your way.
Nickel? You could have got five for a nickel.
Of course. No, it's because of World War II.
World War II, yeah. Yeah. And then it became Veterans Day. Mm-hmm. So again, thanks to all the veterans and all those who are serving now. We really, truly, and we mean it sincerely here at Catholic Answers, are very, very grateful. 888-318-7884, the number. Why are you an atheist? The question. And we go now to Damien in San Francisco. Damien, why are you an atheist?
Hi, everybody. Hi, Trent. First, I want to ask, Trent, are you doing okay there with the fires down in Southern California?
I haven't. Thank you for asking, Damien. I have not seen anything firsthand around here. The only remnant of the fire that I've seen is when the sun sets. It is red, like the red sun of Krypton. Actually, it's a beautiful
or the apocalypse.
Right. It's a very Crayola red. So beautiful, but at a high price. We know there many lives have been lost and property damaged here. So we certainly
it's to the pray. North of us, though. In Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's to the north. So we pray for that fire to be contained swiftly. But do thank you for inquiring.
Yeah, I just want to put a plug in there for the Airbnb website. They're allowing people to post their homes to be given out to people that need that in the communities there. So if y'all could spread the word. So.
Will do. And yeah, definitely check out the Red Cross, see if they need disaster supplies and other things like that. But thanks for pointing us in that direction.
Sure. And but as to the position here, sure. I've always been an atheist. I grew up in a Christian home, and I just never experienced anything supernatural. Never, it was just more like a cultural tradition with, as far as I looked at it.
Sure.
And I've heard all the arguments before, and you're right. There are logical consistencies to them. But there's logical consistencies to comic books as well. Mm-hmm. They're also internally consistent as well, but that doesn't make Thanos and those magical stones actually exist in reality, because you have to actually demonstrate it. A good example would be like, because I'm talking
about Infinity Stones.
Justified belief.
They're Infinity Stones.
The Infinity Stones.
Also called Infinity Gems in the comics. But yeah, yeah.
Can we keep a quick reply. Over that?
Right. Let me give you a quick reply to that. I agree with you. Internal consistency is a necessary condition for something to be true, but it is not sufficient. You're correct that something could be internally consistent and contain no contradictions. That does not guarantee that it's true, but you need to have that in order for it to be true, in the sense of not having logical inconsistencies or contradictions. So the argument I was making with the previous caller is saying one thing that would falsify my belief would be if it were shown to be internally inconsistent, then it could not possibly be true, which would be one avenue if someone were to try to change my mind on the issue. But you're right. But so for me, I think that theism, and more particular Christian theism, is both internally consistent, and I also think the evidence points in that direction. So that'd be my reply to your thoughts on
There's
that.
There's actually no evidence of the supernatural. It's all just logical argument.
It's like
saying that there's evidence of Harry Potter.
There is no evidence of Harry Potter, but there is
internal logical consistencies to the series.
What is evidence?
Evidence is something that can be peer reviewed and independently reviewed, verified, the scientific process.
So something does not count as evidence unless it's peer reviewed in a scientific process?
Correct. We're trying to understand, what is justified belief about reality? Because you can have belief about something based on, a hypothesis. So you can believe that maybe your hypothesis is probably correct. But you have to throw in the word probably, because you haven't tested it and had reality counter to your hypothesis there. Reality is the metric, is the bar for what we have justified belief about reality.
But Damien, I don't see how that follows, Damien, that evidence is what is scientifically peer reviewed, because you have evidence that might be presented in a courtroom. Psy might present evidence for the claim that Star Wars is overrated. Star Wars is not as good as other science fiction films, and that would be a conclusion. And that could just be an assertion, but I'm not willing to believe it unless he gives me reasons underneath that. And they're not scientific or peer-reviewed, but I think everyone would tell me that's evidence for his position. So I think a better definition of evidence, because the one you offered is far too narrow, would just be this. Evidence is that which makes a conclusion more likely to be true. I think that's a better definition, wouldn't you say?
No, because you're talking about two different things. One is an evidence for someone's assertion.
Right.
And the other one is evidence in reference to reality. I can assert that Thanos is the most powerful character in the movie series. Mm-hmm. And I can argue that based on the actual movies that we sit down and watch, but that still doesn't make Thanos actually exist.
No, but what you're saying is you're making a claim. You're making a claim that is – there are claims – that are not scientific claims, right?
If they're not referenced to reality, they wouldn't be scientific claims.
Well, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a reality. It's just a fictional reality with its own rules involved. So you would just present evidence from within that particular fictional reality. You wouldn't jump to the conclusion, that it's within the same realm that you and I inhabit, but it's a fictional subset of reality. But my point is simply that we make assertions and claims all the time. We present evidence for those claims. Much the same way I think you have made an assertion earlier when you said there is no evidence for the supernatural. And to me, I would say I would enjoy hearing evidence for that particular claim. And one could put forward different kinds of evidence, and we would discuss that. Because without evidence, that what you said, that itself is an assertion, that there's just no evidence for the supernatural.
Do we lose you, Damien?
Hello?
He's still on the line.
Did we?
We can't hear him. Maybe it's a technical problem. Oh, and he left. He dropped. So maybe that. If you're listening, Damien in San Francisco, please give us a call back. Mm-hmm. It seems like the line went dead.
And might have had a technical problem there. Bring you back. So this is an important side to bring up right now, because I think when Christians and atheists talk about the existence of God, we have to make sure we get our terms right. So if you define the terms in a very restricted, narrow way, the conversation never gets off the ground. In fact, I would say some atheists, how they define their terms, they've already the game's already over. That they've already, their position is now unfalsifiable. That if you say, you know, I define God as an immaterial, eternal, all powerful, infinite active being that sustains the universe. God is not an object within the universe. God is a reality that sustains the universe, that exists beyond it and is not material. And if you say, well, something only exists if I can detect it scientifically.
Well,
but science only detects the material. Well, that's the only, those are the only things that exist are material things in the universe. Well, you've already defined everything so that God could not possibly exist. Or as we saw at our previous caller, Santiago, well, I don't know what would convince me there's a God.
Yeah.
Then we can't even have a conversation here. If we're talking about evidence, like I'll believe in God if you give me evidence. Well, what do you mean by evidence?
Yeah.
What is evidence? And if you define it as, well, it's something scientifically peer reviewed, that's evidence for scientific claims. So there's other kinds of claims. And we just gave one that if, you know, you and I would have a discussion about the artistic merits of a film, you say, well, this is just the greatest film of all time. Why? Because it is. That would be circular. I would say, well, here are the reasons for it. And those reasons are also called evidence.
Yeah.
Evidence in just the broadest sense of the term and what makes sense is that which makes a conclusion more likely to be true. In fact, there are atheists who will say, who look at probabilistic evidence, and these are atheists I enjoy reading, who say, yeah, if the universe began to exist, that is evidence for God. Now, they wouldn't say it's evidence that tips the scales towards him existing, but they're balancing it. There are many atheists who say, well, there's some evidence for God, like morality or the universe beginning, but there's a lot more evidence against him. So when you weigh everything, it's more likely God does not exist. That's also another misconception atheists have about evidence, that they think that evidence is the same as proof.
Yeah. Okay.
That if you have but that doesn't make sense because evidence is just something that is more likely to make something true, even by a little bit. That's why when you're in a court of law, you present, you know, hundreds of items of evidence and you weigh each one on what it supports with hypothesis. That's one way to look at God. Now, personally, when I look at the existence of God, I like metaphysical proofs.
Yeah.
Mr. Carlo Broussard is fantastic at reciting them and going them into intricate detail here.
Yes.
You've probably heard that they give a good amount of certainty. That's one way to look at God. Another way to look at God is the balance of probability of the evidence. And so for me is, well, what is the evidence? Let's look at what, when you follow it, points to something beyond the universe itself. When someone just makes assertions, like if I say there's evidence for God, someone could say, well, what is that evidence? Great, let me share it with you. With the first caller, we had a lengthy discussion about cosmology. But by that same token, someone who says there is no good evidence for God, that's an assertion.
Yeah, right.
I would say, well, why should I believe that?
Yeah.
Well, you prove it. I don't have to. What if I'm purely agnostic? What if I am just looking over the fence? I am the metaphysical Wilson.
Yeah.
From Home Improvement.
All right, metaphysical Wilson.
The metaphysical Wilson. Howdy, yeah. Neighbor. I was wondering about God and... Ooh, you know, I'm going to be Tim Allen, Catholic apologist here, you know, offering evidence and people might disagree. And you're just peering over the fence, looking at one neighbor who says there is God, another neighbor who says there is no evidence. I'd say, well, give me your evidence for both of your claims. And then I would look through and sift through to that. You can't just, if you just say things like a previous caller, hopefully we'll bring him back if he calls back and says, oh, you know, God is just like Harry Potter. Why should I believe that? In fact, I would say, well, saying there is no God, God does not exist, the universe exists without God, to me is like saying you can have Harry Potter without J.K. Rowling. Well, why do you need an author? It's just Harry Potter. He exists. I read it. It's here. You don't need anything more than that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think you do. So, and there, I mean, we don't know, you know, that this has an author. There's works that are anonymous. And, you know, that's where it seems more analogous to me when people make those kinds of arguments.
I hope you will call back, Damien. We'd love to continue the conversation. Our number, 888-318-7884. Our topic today, why are you an atheist on this Veterans Day? If you are an atheist or an unbeliever of any sort, give us a call, 888-318-7884. If you prefer the spelled version, it's 888-31-TRUTH. Trent, I wish I could get your musings every day. That's how much I think of the mind of Trent Horn. I wish I could every day.
And you can.
What? Pray tell. How?
By going to TrentHornPodcast.com. You can get access to my daily podcast, The Council of Trent, C-O-U-N-S-E-L. So I do a daily podcast there, and it's about a half hour in length. And for those who make a monthly donation, they get access to bonus content, help the podcast to continue and grow. And we've got a lot of great episodes on theology, apologetics. And on Fridays, I do Free Fall Fridays, where I talk about whatever fun thing pops in my mind. Very entertaining. The most previous one I did was actually one on Star Wars itself. So covers a lot of great topics. You can also get it at iTunes and Google Play. Just look up Council of Trent, C-O-U-N-S-E-L. And if you can find it there, or you can get it at TrentHornPodcast.com.
TrentHornPodcast.com. And have you ever done one on why it just seems so impossible to make a good Superman movie? Why can't anybody just make
I
a
have,
good Superman
I have
movie?
Referenced that before when I talked about Marvel and DC Comics. You can actually make a good Superman film. The best Superman films I have seen are actually the animated DC Universe films. All-Star Superman is a very good one. The most recent Death of Superman, with its coming sequel, The Reign of the Supermen, actually looks pretty good.
Uh-huh.
So the animated movies, like what Bruce Timm puts forward, they really understand the character. It's just a problem in the recent live action films, Superman is very gritty and you want to make him realistic. And so to make him realistic, you try to make it like the Dark Knight universe, where he's kind of cynical or mopey. But that's not what makes Superman attractive. He's just a sterling beacon of hope. And that's why you want to see Superman and his genuine love and care for human beings, and how he's trying to wrestle with having these godlike powers among humans that he cares for. And so that's what makes it. So I think so All-Star Superman is one that I like a lot. I think it's a good introduction for a film that works. But that's, you get that kind of stuff on Fridays. The rest of the week, we talk about theology, apologetics. Today, I just did a episode on responding to a viral tweet storm saying that men are responsible for 100% of unintended pregnancies. Men are 100% responsible for them.
Seems hard to be 100%.
Yeah, but you know, this tweet has been liked over 200,000 times. So a lot of people agree. So I cover that on my podcast. And if you want to hear that, you can go to TrentHornPodcast.com.
Although it certainly would help the situation if men would refrain from sexual intercourse until they are married and then stay married for their entire life.
Yeah,
that
why
certainly
not?
Would help.
Virtue is not just its own reward. It helps make life easier and happier and more fulfilling for everyone involved to live the way that we were made for, because we were made this way. Hence, book.
MadeThisWayBook.com. We just did a plug for your podcast. We're not going straight into a plug for your book.
We'll wait.
TrentHornPodcast.com.
Okay.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Now, not only can you watch EWTN anywhere, but anytime with EWTN On Demand. Get on-demand access to more than 12,000 EWTN programs, including live shows and specials, all in one place, all free. Just go to EWTN.com/on-demand. There's nothing to fill out, no memberships required, and no fees to pay. All you need is an internet connection, and you're good to go. EWTN On Demand. Fast, easy, and free.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Happy Veterans Day. Thanks to all the veterans out there. And I suppose it's a moment to think about things when you have the 100th anniversary of the end of the First World War, a moment to think about our own times and what are those actions that lead to war and what are those that lead to peace. We're not doing a great job on the ones that lead to peace. We need to work on that.
Well, I don't know. If you look at things from a historical perspective like Steven Pinker does, actually violence has decreased overall in the past 4,000 years throughout the history of humanity. The number of violent wars has decreased dramatically. Things are actually getting a lot better. And so there's different ways you might look at the cause of that. This can be controversial, of course. I mean, I have different opinions about why, you know, I think the spread of the gospel has actually helped to bring peace in the world. Though I also believe that the reason we don't have massive wars like what we see in World War I or World War II is because we have nuclear proliferation.
Yeah.
So the Catholic Church teaches that the use of nuclear weapons in almost all contexts would probably be wrong. It talks about how just war doctrine would prohibit the use of weapons that are indiscriminate and massive in their destruction of populations.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily mean that it would prohibit it universally, I don't think. Such as if you were in a war and you, in order to win the war, you had to destroy a military fleet at sea, you might use a small nuclear weapon to do that. Though, of course, the doctrine of MAD, mutually assured destruction, one person uses a nuke, everyone else uses them, right. And it's game over. Or as the Matthew Broderick film from the 1980s, War Games.
Oh, yeah.
An intriguing game.
With Ali Sheedy.
Yeah. The only winning move is not to play.
I'm glad you imitated the computer from War Games. You are a real mimic. But what I was thinking more of, Trent, is that the roots of war are human selfishness.
Of course,
And we're certainly not in an era of defeating selfishness. No. There's plenty of it to go around. It's dangerous.
That's what's hard is that we are still incredibly selfish creatures.
Yeah.
And so, however, we have lived in an age where I think that Aldous Huxley's book Brave New World is now very key on point to what's happened to us. Neil Postman talked about this in Amusing Ourselves to Death, that Fahrenheit 451 also related to this, that there is visions of dystopia where the idea here is government suppresses freedom through an iron grip and keeps people enslaved. Though Huxley and others, and this is also kind of a theme in Bradley's Fahrenheit 451, which is not about censorship as much as his hatred of television, that what really would lead to dystopia is just amusing ourselves to death and just turning hopelessly inwards through things like technology, which is something we have to definitely watch out for.
I'm sorry.
So be sure to get the Catholic Answers Live app.
I know you said something good, but I was playing a video game. Oh, sorry. You'll have to tell me later what it was. Let's
sure
go
thing.
To John in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. You're up next, John. Why are you an atheist?
Well, I'm ambivalent.
Okay.
At best. But the pull is stronger towards the atheistic. Mm-hmm. It's not where I want to be, but it's the way things get sometimes for me.
What?
So it's been very problematic.
Yeah. What? That's interesting. You don't want to go in that way, but something's pulling you there. What's that?
Yeah. Well, the whole idea, you know, that occurs to me is that, and you've heard this, I'm sure, many times before.
Sure.
That the whole idea of heaven and life after death sounds entirely like a fabrication to kind of ease our anxiety about death and nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about God, and the more I think about that whole concept of God, I think about man has made God in the image of man,
mm-hmm.
Especially when we think about Jesus, coming down and becoming, third person in the Trinity, and who is God.
Second, but yes.
Incarnate. Mm-hmm. And then you say, well, now we're really laying it out that that's really an invention.
So you're worried that we just made it up, kind of.
Well, yeah, and you've heard that before, I'm sure, many times.
I have.
So I don't know where to go with it because naturally, I have a natural intention towards belief.
Well, here's what I would say, John. First, number one, even if something were made up, it doesn't follow that it's not true. Imagine you have a group of orphans in an orphanage. And they hate living in an orphanage. And one of them says, I bet this is not what we were meant to have. I think that we actually, at one time, we had parents. And that's why, we had parents. We don't have them anymore. But that's where we came from. And it would be better if we were with them than here. Now, some of the other orphans might say, oh, none of us ever really had parents. We're just from here. And that's just that. You just made that up, that there are these parents who really love us and are out there. And that doesn't mean that it's not true. It could be the case. Some people in that orphanage, maybe they're orphans, not because their parents are callous, but because in a disaster, they've been separated from their parents, or through extreme poverty, their parents placed them there so they wouldn't starve to death. And so these orphans might say, we have loving parents. And they say, you just made that up to feel better. Well, even if they thought of that to feel better, that doesn't take away from the fact that, one, logically, they have to have parents. Otherwise, where did they come from if they didn't have parents? So same way you might say with God, that even if people thought of God to be comforted, it doesn't follow God doesn't exist, because that is that same logical problem. Where did everything come from, to answer that question? Number two, this same objection can go against atheism. And actually, that people just made up atheism so they wouldn't have to worry about being judged by God or eternal damnation. So, John, I'd love to talk with you a bit more about this. So I hope you will stay on the line. We'll have a few commercials and we'll come right back. Could you stay with us for a little bit more?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Great. Thanks,
Nick,
John.
Yes. So, John, we will be right back to continue this conversation. Why are you an atheist? Our topic today on Catholic Answers Live.
Author Mark McNeil spent years in the Oneness Pentecostal movement, praying in its lively services, zealously spreading its unconventional teachings, and rejecting mainstream Christianity as misguided. Then he left it all behind. All in the Name is the story of a man who believed he was among an elite group of believers who followed the true faith when so many others had strayed. But an inquisitive mind, careful study, and the action of the Holy Spirit finally led Mark out of Oneness Pentecostalism and into the Catholic Church. This is an inspiring conversion story you won't want to miss. It's a faith strengthener for Catholics and an intriguing challenge to those who deny the doctrine of the Trinity. Order your copy of All in the Name today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If only evangelization was easy. But the truth of the matter is that most of the time, it's not. Talking about the Catholic faith is enough of a challenge even before dealing with the roadblocks that keep people from listening with an open mind. Apologist Carlo Broussard recognized that as he wrote Prepare the Way, a guide to step-by-step strategies that readers can use to break down those barriers, barriers to the very existence of God and religious truth, barriers to basic Christian beliefs, and barriers to the distinctive teachings and claims of the Catholic Church. Don't let obstacles get in your way. Learn how to overcome them. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest, John on the line in Pennsylvania. And what our topic for the day, why are you an atheist? If you're an atheist, there is still time. We probably could get your call in if you gave a call now, 888-318-7884. If you'd like to tell us your reasoning, why you do not believe in the existence of God, or doubt it, the existence of God, or are just not interested in whether or not God exists. All of those would be perfectly reasonable things to talk about on Atheist, on Why You're an Atheist Day, 888-318-7884. Back to John in Pennsylvania. Still with us, John?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, John, let me recap for our listeners who came across the break. You said you're pulled towards atheism. You'd rather not be, because you wonder that people may have just come up with God and heaven to make themselves just feel better, and something they kind of came up with. It might not actually be true. So I have three thoughts on that. First, even if people did come up with heaven and God for more selfish reasons, that doesn't disprove it, because there could still be good evidence for God that goes along with those motivations. Similarly to the case of orphans who selfishly think up that they have loving parents looking for them, that doesn't disprove the existence of such loving parents. So the motivation for a belief does not show whether the belief is true or false. And that leads to my second point, that someone could be motivated to believe in atheism so they don't have to worry about God or worry about going to hell or worry about judgment or an afterlife, and so they can live their life how they want. Now, I would not say that that shows atheism as false. It could still be true, even if you just really want atheism to be true. So that's the second thing I would bring up. And the third is this, that if you're looking in either way, you could take a page from what's called Pascal's Wager and say, you know what? I really want the Christian faith to be true. I want God to exist. And for if I listen to God and allow God to enter into my life, have God's divine life, his grace into my soul, so that my soul can be prepared to spend eternity with him, to have eternal life with God in heaven, I want that to be true. And if there's nothing really showing me that it's false, I choose to believe that. And I choose to believe in God. And that'd be more of a pragmatic argument. And at the end of the day, look, what have I got to lose? If I believe that God is real, and if I listen to what God says and I'll spend eternity with him, if he's real, hey, great, eternity. If he's not real, well, then after death, I'm never going to know I was wrong. So I really don't really have anything to lose, especially if I want this to be true. So if I just choose to believe it or at least act like it's true, more and more every day can kind of seep in. So those are some of my thoughts on where you're coming from. What do you think of that, or do you have any other thoughts or questions?
I think that the place one has to go to then is the evidence.
Sure. That's fine.
That would have to be the next step. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Pascal, he was such a great scientist and everything. And as you say, you make a choice, because what the heck do you have to lose anyway? Why not take the easy way out? Feel wonderful and great about, you know, your anticipation of a life you're after, and you don't have to worry about all the rest of the stuff. If you can do it, fine. And I guess he was able to do it. And I think he did have an experience with, I don't know, the thorn, a miracle of the thorn. I think his sister was involved. Well, they were both, you know, he became very involved in the,
Well, John, let me jump in.
Yeah.
For me, I'm not saying Pascal's Wager is just something in every single case. Just rely on that and choose to believe in God. I agree with you. We should examine evidence and follow it where it leads. But for some people, they will look at the evidence and they will be still on the fence. It will be 50-50 for them. And not believing is a choice. Not making a choice in this case is a choice. You're forced to either choose God or not choose him. There's no way you can just kind of sit the debate out. So if you look at the evidence and it's still 50-50 for you, you know, you're, like you said, you're pulled in one direction, but you're kind of like in the middle. For me, if it's 50-50 and you want Christianity to be true, and you're just like kind of even, it could be one way or the other, then the wager, I think, justifies jumping towards just living as if it were true and seeing how that impacts your life and just choosing to believe that because you have nothing to lose. Now, for many people, if the evidence doesn't meet that standard, they just can't do that. So I do agree with you, you should follow the evidence, but if it makes its way to the 50-50 mark, I don't think the wager is a problematic element to put in here. So if you like, though, when it comes to evidence, John, if you stay on the line and you get share your email address with our call screener, who should be right over there, be able to give that to you, I'd be happy to send you my book, Why We're Catholic. It might give you some interesting thoughts both on God and the Catholic faith. Would you be interested in that?
Oh, yes. I appreciate that. Thanks, Trent. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, I can do that for you.
All right, John, hang on the line. Assistant producer Marie will get your digits, and we will send that book off to you. Oh, Damien in San Francisco is back. Damien watches on YouTube. And I don't know how we lost you, Damien. If it was our end, I apologize. We didn't mean to hang up on you. And I don't recall where we were in the conversation.
Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me there?
Yeah, we can. So I think we have a few other callers waiting in the queue. I still would like to get to them. Normally, I don't like people getting seconds if they've already had firsts, but I've enjoyed our conversation so far. So maybe we could chat a little bit more while we get some of the other calls going up in the queue. We've talked before. Are you there?
I believe we left off at talking about justified belief and evidence.
Yeah, because I think that's where we're starting, because this is interesting. I think, I don't know, you may have called, your voice sounds familiar. I feel like we've spoken before on some of these topics, and I think this is a foundational element of the divide between Christians and atheists, or really theists and atheists. What counts as evidence and what counts as justification? as we've been talking, I think that you, I feel like you have a narrow view of what counts as evidence or justification, that it's purely scientific. And that works for scientific questions. But there's lots of questions about big things in the world that are philosophical. For example, the question, what is evidence or what counts as justified? The very question itself, that I'm going to say that is not a scientific question. We can't, there's no scientific standard we'd appeal to that would tell us what evidence is or what counts as knowledge. Like you use the phrase justified true belief, and that's kind of a placeholder. People don't even really agree on what knowledge is. Would you agree? So that would be one example of a philosophical question we have to use logic and reason to answer that science really can't answer for us. What do you think of that?
Yeah, now we're just obfuscating at this point. When we're getting into, we have to have an agreement on terms of what evidence is. And so when you, when we're trying to, and when it's in reference to understanding what is a justified belief about the reality that we're all experiencing,
right,
the reference point of what your language is about is referencing reality. Reality is the bar. And so whatever language you want to use, that everybody has to agree on the terms and the definitions, of course.
Right.
But if you're talking about something that's in reference to describing reality, you have to reflect your logical conclusions to what reality demonstrates or what you can currently justify to demonstrate. Like, for example, Einstein logically, correctly, mathematically concluded that gravity waves should exist. But we weren't justified in having that as a true belief until we tested it against reality, and reality demonstrated it, that those, that, that was there back in 2015. Mm-hmm. But he logically concluded that back at the beginning of the 20th century. But
right.
In that gap, there was no reason to be justified in holding that as a true belief.
But Damien, that's because gravity fields are a material aspect within the space-time universe. So he proposed a hypothesis saying, okay, this, that if our model of the universe is correct, we would find these things, we would find these elements. And I'm sure there's similar things in the history of science where people talk about stars, and that if stars collapsed, we would expect to find gravity wells or black holes. Yet black holes were only discovered fairly recently in the history of science. We can't really, you can't even directly observe a black hole. You have to observe its existence by things like planetary wobble and things like that. So I agree with you, that makes sense for some things, like physical things within the universe. But the question of what reality is, there's different ways to answer that question. Science will give us some answers. Philosophy will give us other answers. So let me ask you a question. Is reality just material? Is all of reality material, or are there some, or are there immaterial parts of reality?
Reality is everything, basically, the universe itself, and that includes what was prior to the Big Bang and all of it. So all of reality, that's what I'm talking about there.
Right, but
you can have abstract ideas like mathematics, but that's just a language that wasn't originally in reference to reality. Because what does it mean to have two of something? Well, two numbers are just adjectives that are describing an experienced reality.
Okay, so are you saying, well, Damien, are you saying the only things that exist are, the only things that have real existence are material things?
I don't know, because that's, to exist, to me, what existence means is that you can demonstrate it in reality. That means it's temporal. And you can detect it in reality in some way. Those two things, for me, is what constitutes something to exist.
So something can something can only exist if we can prove it exists? We can detect it?
And we're talking about justified existence. Because, like, there could be a meteor coming to destroy our planet right now, but if we don't, but we do know, and we do know that meteors exist.
Right.
We're not justified in believing that particular meteor is coming to destroy our planet. We wouldn't be justified in living our lives as if that's an actual truth of reality.
Okay. Well, I think that we're coming to the break here. We're coming to our third break here. And I think that we still, maybe you'll call back and we can have more fruitful discussion on this. I think where we veered off course is that this is the big divide between us. And I think we've had this conversation before. I really want to get past this hurdle, namely that what counts as justification or evidence is what you can scientifically verify. And I gave examples saying that people, even yourself, have made assertions like, what is reality? What is evidence? What is reality, just material or immaterial? And I credit you saying you don't know if it's material or immaterial. Oh, that's a great way to start. I applaud you for saying that. So since we don't know, we can't be held to the standard that in order to show if something exists, we have to demonstrate its material existence, because there could be immaterial things there, because you offered a one view of mathematics that's more of a fictionalized view, that math is just a language we create. I think that's contradicted by the fact that mathematics is universal and human beings cannot change mathematical truths. We can change truths about Batman and Harry Potter and Thanos. They're fictional. If math were fictional, we could change its truths as well, but we can't. So I think that shows that math is objective and has real existence apart from human minds. So if there can be immaterial objects, numbers, truths, then we're on the path to an immaterial ground of reality, and that could include some unlimited immaterial active being, or what we call God. But in order to get there, we got to get over that hurdle first, that everything we believe has to be proved scientifically, because that itself, that belief, cannot be proven scientifically. So maybe you'll call back when we do the show again, and we will continue our discussion and find some justified true beliefs. But I do thank you for calling.
Thanks, Damien. Trent Horn, our guest, his brand new book, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. He wrote that with Layla Miller. You can get it along with just about everything else that's in the store at shop.catholic.com for 20% off. Right now, you just put in the promo code CALIVE18 and get that 20% off just about everything at shop.catholic.com.
This is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Thank you for listening to Catholic Answers Live.
We need Catholic radio because we need the voice of the Church in the public forum. We live in a time that the secular voice dominates so thoroughly that we need to get that Catholic perspective out. Just as Fulton Sheen used radio and TV in the last century, we need to continue to use. This means to announce the Catholic faith in the public forum.
Bishop Robert Barron thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn is our guest. The question of the hour, why are you an atheist? We start with Stacy in Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Stacy, why are you an atheist? Stacy, do we have you there?
Hello?
Oh, no. I think this is Akil in Maryland. I apologize. Why are you an atheist, Akil?
Oh, hey, how's it going? I guess the reason I'm an atheist is I have a couple of philosophical arguments for atheism, and I was wondering if I could present those.
Ah, now that is a change of pace and refreshing one indeed. Go right ahead.
Okay, so the first one, well, probably the only one that we'll talk about, is from a notion called intentionality. Now, I think what intentionality is, it's a property of mental states such that, well, okay, there are mental states with propositional content, like a desire or a belief.
Okay.
And I think this is what grounds agency. Now, I think these sorts of mental states have certain properties such that they would be inconsistent with our attribution of them to something like, to something like an omnipotent being. Intentional states are normative.
They
care. Yes.
Okay.
Now, that means that they're distinguished from causal dispositions. And the way to distinguish an intention from a disposition is the possibility of failure. Right? So if I intend to actualize 5, it follows that I can fail to actualize I. Now, something like an omnipotent being wouldn't have this capacity, given that an omnipotent being would be all-powerful. And so it would be impossible to distinguish an omnipotent being from a mere mechanism. And so I don't think we could have an omnipotent agent.
So let me see if I understand this. You define someone intends to do something if there is a possibility that they could fail at what they are trying to do, whereas a disposition, they're merely just doing it?
Right. So one way to understand the distinction would be something like a lightning bolt, right? If a lightning bolt strikes a mailbox as opposed to a house, we wouldn't say the lightning bolt tried to strike the house and failed and stroked the mailbox. So I strike the mailbox. No, the lightning bolt was merely disposed to strike the mailbox.
Okay, I see what you're saying here. Oh, okay, I guess when I hear this then, okay, so in order to be a person, you have to have intentions. To have intentions, you have to be able to fail at what you are intending to do, have the possibility of failure. God does not have the possibility of failure, therefore he can't have intentions, therefore he can't be a person. So God, at least if God exists, he's not personal in any way. I don't know if I would define it that way. There's different, I mean, one response I could give to your philosophical argument is that I could just redefine the terms that are implied, both intentionality and person, and how they're applied to God. Many classical theists would say that God is not a person in the sense that you and I are persons, that when we speak about God, we're speaking about him analogously. So while you and I might have truths in our mind, God contains all truths. He possesses all knowledge, for example. So I think that if we speak about God in these personal ways, we always have to remember we're speaking analogously. Second, I guess I might define intentionality this way. I intend to do something. There is intent involved if I could have chosen other courses of action, but chose this instead of other things. So it's like a lightning bolt. You're right. It doesn't choose a house over a mailbox. It just hits the house. Whereas an arsonist could choose a house or a bunch of firewood, that there could be other options. So for me, though, if God could have done otherwise, you know, they could have done otherwise, if God could have not made the universe or not made particular human beings, there is intention there. So I don't know if we have to have the concept of failure in there. We could just have the concept of doing otherwise. Do you see that if we put it that way? I don't see the problem there if we do it that way.
Okay, well, I can, if you want me to respond to your second point first or your first point, I'll just go in succession, right?
Okay.
So with regards to analogical predication, I just don't understand what it would mean to actually predicate of God that he is a person if what we predicate of ourselves when we say that we are people is that we do have these intentional states of mind. When you're saying that we merely analogically predicate of God, there doesn't seem to be any property held in common, right? If you're saying that God doesn't, in fact, have these normative intentional states.
Well, I think that God has a will. God wills for a certain state of affairs to be. I don't think he has a mind with particular mental states because he doesn't have any kind of fractured existence. Instead, I believe that God just is being itself. And as such, he immediately apprehends all truths and can affect the universe in any logically consistent way. And so what God can do is that God can will certain ends or states of affairs. God can will state of affair X, which is the world that we currently reside in. Or he could will some other kind of alternative reality or will other things that have not taken place. They exist merely as possibilities in God's mind. So I still think we can speak of God in a personal way that he wills this, but he could will other things, and he's just not determined to act in any way outside of himself, like something that might be determined here in our world. I might recommend for you that if you'd like to go a little bit deeper into this, you might enjoy the work of the philosopher Edward Fazer. He has a great book called Five Proofs for the Existence of God that you might find helpful. I would love to continue the discussion because I love, you know, get into the philosophical nitty-gritty. But we do have a few more callers, and I want to try to get them on the line before the show closes out. So I do thank you for calling in.
Thank you very much, Akhil. Appreciate that call. 888-318-7884, our number here if you are an atheist and would like to talk with Trent. Trent, a caller called with a question that I'm going to read to you because I guess the caller didn't want to stay on the line, or I'm not sure why. I guess I shouldn't guess why. If we had to come from somewhere, doesn't that mean God came from somewhere?
Well, I appreciate the caller brought this up because I spoke about, I think it was with John from Pennsylvania, using my orphanage example, that just because someone has a strong motivation to believe something, that doesn't mean that it's false. In fact, that's called the genetic fallacy. That's saying that a belief is falsified because of the origins of the belief. Why you came to believe something, the psychological reasons, have no bearing on whether the belief is true or false. So the question there with the orphan example was, there could be orphans who really want to have loving parents out there. And that's a psychological motivation. Does that mean they don't have loving parents? No, of course not. They may have parents who are separated from them through things beyond their control. It certainly wouldn't mean they don't have parents, because if they did not have parents, that would not explain their own existence. Even if they really want to have parents out there, that want is not falsified by the mere wanting. They do have parents because they exist. Where did they come from? Now, the objection the caller mentioned, who didn't get on air, is saying, well, if the orphans ask where did we come from, then shouldn't God ask where he came from? Now, I was not proposing that argument in a very rigid, philosophically precise way.
Okay.
It's just an intuitive, with an assumption was built into it, that if someone began to exist, or they don't have to exist,
yeah,
the orphans can say, there was a time when we weren't here.
Mm-hmm.
We're not eternal. Yeah. Where did we come from? Then we can apply that same logic to the universe itself. Where did it come from? Why does it exist? And so it's funny. This is one of the stock objections to the existence of God. If God created everything, what created God? And no Christian philosopher worth his salt says everything needs a cause, though. They would say everything that begins to exist or could fail to exist needs a cause.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you ask that, because here's the thing. When people ask that, if God made everything, what created God? We could ask that of anything. If the Big Bang made everything, what made the Big Bang? If our universe came from a previously existing multiverse, what made the previously existing multiverse? So you could ask any question where you propose an explanation, this explains the universe. Someone could ask, well, what explains that?
Yes.
Okay, well, then it's this. Well, what explains that? And then whether you're a Christian or an atheist, you have only two options here in the explanatory chain. Either the chain is infinite. Well, there's just an infinite number of explanations. Or there's an ultimate explanation. So, I mean, it's going to end in one of those things, whether you're a Christian or an atheist. So if you're an atheist, you're either going to pick, well, there's just explanations ad infinitum, infinitely.
Yeah. It's just explanations all the way down.
But then that's not very satisfactory. That's like saying, what's holding up that chandelier, the chains? Well, an infinite number of chains doesn't hold up the chandelier if they're disconnected from a ceiling. Doesn't matter how many you have.
Yeah.
There's still no explanation there. The chandelier falls. Infinite explanations are very bad in that regard. And I think many atheists stop at an ultimate explanation with mystery wrapped around it. Well, it's the Big Bang. We don't fully understand it because we don't have a theory of quantum gravity. Or it's the multiverse and we don't understand it because we don't have a full theory of, you know, whatever. And so what we'd say, well, our ultimate explanation is something that is infinite in existence, has no limits, what we commonly call God, though there's some mysterious aspects to God. So if we can have that with some natural explanations, why can't we have that as well? We are not using a God of the gaps argument, not I don't know, therefore God. It's logically we reach an explanation that has these divine attributes, that has these ultimate, infinite attributes. Because otherwise, if they were limited in any way, you would still ask, where did that come from?
What if I asked an atheist this question? Would it be reasonable to say, you're asserting something about nature when you claim to be an atheist, and what you're asserting is that nature is infinite in time, backwards and forwards, and then to ask for proof of that assertion.
Yeah, I think that's fair. If someone makes the claim that, well, we don't need God to explain the universe because the universe has always been here, then you could say, well, how do you know it's always been here? Then we could talk about that. And you could also challenge the assumption that just because the universe has always been here doesn't mean we don't need God, because we still have the question, why has there been an infinitely old universe instead of nothing at all?
Trent Horn, it's all right hanging out with you. Thanks for doing two whole hours with us today.
And it is more than all right hanging out with you. And by the way, if anyone wants to go with me on a pilgrimage to the sites of St. Paul, do go to Greece 2019. Sign up soon at Greece2019.com.
Greece2019.com. Walk in the footsteps of Paul and Peter and...
And John, because we'll go to John. Patmos.
Fair enough. Greece 2019. Thanks again, Trent Horn. Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum with Tim Staples. Oh, my gosh. That's almost as good as 2 hours with Trent Horn.
Almost.
We'll see you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.